Many of us have dreamed of packing up and finding a better life in the country, and now the pandemic's made that dream a possibility for a lot more of us, thanks to flexible work arrangements. The latest figures do show many of us are making the move from capital cities in every state and territory to our regional centres. However, are the regions equipped for the spate of new arrivals? In fact, how do you make sure the very lifestyle you're moving for isn't being quashed by the sheer weight of numbers? If you're a local or a newcomer, how have you experienced the influx into your region? Wherever you're living in a regional community up and down the East Coast, do drop me a report onto our text line. Nicole Gurran is Professor of Urban and Regional Planning at the University of Sydney, and Nicole's also the Director of the Festival of Urbanism, which is on next week. We'll give you some more details later. With me too is Trevor Budge. Trevor is a longtime planner and the Strategic Projects Officer at the City of Greater Bendigo in Victoria, one of those growth cities in regional Australia. Trevor and Nicole, hello. Welcome to Life Matters.
Good morning.
Trevor, let me ask you first. You've been in planning for many years, but you're now currently working for local government in Bendigo. What are you seeing there in terms of trends?
Well, there's no doubt, as your introduction showed, it's true. I think it's fair to say over the last 18 months, cities like Bendigo have experienced a considerable surge in interest in people wanting to buy properties. In some cases, that's for investment purposes, but many people wanting to move. Anecdotal evidence from our real estate industry is that they've never had an 18-month period like that, and they're just staggered at the number of people who've bought sight unseen, people coming out of not just Melbourne, but in case of Bendigo, people coming out of places like Sydney. And, you know, prices have boomed. Rental is really short. Very hard to get rental property. So, yes, dramatic changes.
And is it fair to say, Trevor, that do you think places like Bendigo, I know that you work there, so maybe you can only speak for that region, but do you feel like regional cities were ready for this, or were they caught napping?
Well, it's not as though regional cities generally haven't been growing. Most of the regional cities that are in that sort of population range of sort of 50 to 200,000 people that are within about 2 hours commute of our major metropolitan areas have been experiencing slow but steady growth. And although in recent years that's probably accelerated in many cases, and places like, say, Bendigo and Ballarat, over the last few years have been experiencing sort of 1.7, 1.8% growth, which is pretty strong. A place like Geelong, much faster growth. So this has come on top of a pretty strong surge that's been there for quite a while. But the point I'd make is that, you know, 1.7% growth rate on a population of about 100,000 represents, you know, nearly 2,000 people a year. Yeah. If you get a surge and suddenly you've got 3,000 or 4,000 people, you're talking about a 50 or 100% increase in population growth rate. And the point you were making about are they ready, they've been ready for growth, but perhaps not at that level.
Yes, indeed. I'll come back to you in a sec, Trevor, because, Nicole, I'm just wondering, as we've just been discussing there, the kind of trends in growth, rapid growth over the last 18 months that Bendigo has been going through, is that reflected in other parts of regional Australia?
Yes, it certainly is. We're yet to see the detailed breakdown of the data, but for instance, Infrastructure Australia estimates that regional areas of the country have experienced more than 200% increase in growth since COVID began. And on the flip side, cities like Sydney and Melbourne have experienced, particularly Melbourne, an unprecedented exodus of people. So the capital cities overall since the start of the pandemic have lost over 55,000 people. And that figure is double that of previous years. So it's certainly a national trend, and the main recipients of those people have been regional areas, including regional Victoria, as Trevor says, but also, of course, the far north coast, the mid-north coast of New South Wales, to a lesser degree, interstate moves as well. So places in Western Australia have been experiencing ongoing growth prior to the pandemic. And of course, Queensland has picked up, and particularly southeast Queensland has picked up population as well.
I mentioned in the front of this whole story about, you know, the rising inaffordability of capital city houses. I know that must be one factor. What are some of the other factors driving this trend into the regions?
Yeah, I mean, obviously flexible work has made this a possibility for many people. And when you look at the age breakdown of people who've moved, it is primarily working aged people with children who've left the capital cities. So we could hazard a guess to say that housing affordability is one of the drivers, and particularly the opportunity to purchase a home, even if they start the move by renting. But clearly people see an opportunity for a better lifestyle as well, you know, greater amenity, more space, perhaps more time with family, and, you know, a life that's not just about the leash between, you know, a dormitory home in the suburbs and a CBD office. So we can see in this trend that it's something perhaps that many people have actually wanted to make happen. And the unfortunate disruption of COVID has made it a possibility.
Is it also true to say, do you think, Nicole, that our improved internet infrastructure, aka the NBN, and the fact that so many of us were forced by health safety to work from home has opened up a whole new potential for people to live regionally and still have enough fast connection to their workplace hub that they don't need to go to the office?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. I mean, urban planners have been hoping for ages, you know, years and years, that technical innovation, you know, telecommunications could support a less concentrated pattern of urban growth and development, but we hadn't seen any signs. One of the really critical shifts, I think, is when you have tech firms like Atlassian, you know, the absolute, you know, champions of the knowledge economy, when they start to say that they don't mind where their workers are based, you know, that sets off a really big shift in the way that we've thought about, you know, where people can live in relation to their jobs. And of course, even though a whole lot of the workforce can't work from home, our essential workers, when those knowledge workers are freed up in terms of where they live, that provides an opportunity for a decentralised growth once again as well.
Trevor, coming back to you, I understand the city of Greater Bendigo, as a case study here, has committed to building somewhere between 900 and 1,000 houses a year to accommodate this new trend. Now, from my reckoning, that could be anywhere between maybe 2,500 to an extra 4,000 people, depending on how big the population of each house is. Do you have the land, the water, the infrastructure to cope with that kind of increase in building?
Yes, well, as you say, traditionally Bendigo's put on about 800 to 1,000 houses a year. That's been private sector created. If we get a 200% increase in population, and certainly the recent times, have, as Nicole has indicated, that's the sort of level that we've had to experience. We've had to accelerate a number of things. Just taking those things that you mentioned, land supply, yes, land supply is one of the issues. But, of course, you've got to remember that many of our regional cities are old traditional cities. As Nicole has indicated, this is a new form of urban development that we're likely to see. In fact, what I think we'll see is a higher density development. We've seen a lot of interest in people moving into the city centre and around the city centre. But, yes, there will be pressures on greenfield areas on the fringe.
Trevor, I was looking last night at some of the housing estate land packages that are opening up around Bendigo. Some of them are sold out already. Yes. And, you know, and the prices that people are willing to pay for what is basically an urban block is clearly on the increase. I'm just wondering, you know, does the city of Greater Bendigo have the water, the power, the public transport, the health services to match that kind of expansion that's so quick?
If you suddenly put all that population in there, there's going to be extreme pressures. There's no doubt that water sewerage infrastructure, it's not like a tap, you can't turn it on and suddenly it's there.
No, I understand.
It's got to be planned.
Yeah.
And the same goes for, as you say, for things like power grids, for roads, public transport and so on. So there's going to be a challenge for regional cities that have to cope with this sort of growth. And you'll find that most of them are, in fact, talking to state governments around what sort of additional assistance, because in a sense, that growth that we were seeing in some of the corridors around Melbourne might be slowing, but it's only being transferred somewhere else. Nicole's made a very important point about the slowing growth of our metropolitan cities, and of course that's been because largely the overseas migration tap has been turned off. But if yes. that tap gets turned on again, which it could well, we could be back in a situation where we've got metropolitan growth, but we also got regional city growth.
Nicole, just on that, I understand that urban planners generally have been warning for quite some time to policymakers at both state, federal and perhaps local level that we need to prepare ourselves for what could be a very changing landscape, literally, of regional Australia. Do you feel we're anywhere close to being prepared for what's happening at the moment?
Yeah, you raise a really important point, Michael. Look, groups like the Planning Institute of Australia, for instance, have called for a national settlement strategy, and that's simply a plan at the national level for where and how we accommodate population growth in the future. As Trevor says, once the borders open and international migration returns, we will see a focus once more on the cities. And I think it's really important to not lose the opportunity of the present moment to actually provide a basis for a much more decentered approach to where we encourage and support populations and also an economic diversification, which is something that the regions have been calling out for. What that means is that we don't ignore the opportunities in regional Australia or their potential to attract and sustain and retain their existing populations, but we provide the planning and the infrastructure and the facilities, the schools, the universities, the research, the cultural facilities that actually can provide a much firmer basis for population growth in the future. And that will help, ironically, offset the types of pressures that we've seen in cities like Sydney and Melbourne of late.
So are you saying that the decentralisation of possible employment into these regional communities is going to be vital if they're going to survive and continue to grow and prosper?
That's right. It's an important opportunity both for the cities and for the regional areas as well, particularly regional areas that are well connected and could be made even better connected to both the central city areas for people who may need to come to the city once or twice a week, as well as internally well connected by really strong transport networks within the clusters of regional towns. And Victoria is a great example, you know, Bendigo, Ballarat, Geelong, well connected to Melbourne, well connected to one another, really well able to take the opportunity that more flexible work practices offer to attract and sustain some of the knowledge workers who've sort of been concentrated in city areas and use that as a basis to support a more diversified and more balanced population and economic growth opportunities in the future.
While we're talking about employment, I think we should make a few points here that about 80% of all jobs are directly related to population. If your population goes up, you need more workers to service that population. So if the regional cities are going to continue to grow, a lot of the jobs are going to be found just simply servicing the population that's there.
Right.
The second thing is that there's a lot of people, I think, are wedded to the idea that people in regional cities are all about commuting to metropolitan Melbourne. Yes, and there are people who do that. But in reality, we found that at Bendigo, there were more people arriving on the train in the morning to Bendigo than there were leaving.
Is that right?
In other words, regional cities are actually their own generators of commuters.
So people where are those commuters coming from, Trevor?
Well, they're coming from along the line between Bendigo and Melbourne. They're
right.
coming from north of Bendigo. And so when you have something like, as Bendigo's got, we've got the national headquarters of the Bendigo and Adelaide Bank, you know, a hospital with 4,000 workers, major commercial and retail opportunities, people are actually living not just in Bendigo, but they're living in the peri-urban towns between these regional cities and the metropolitan area. So I think it's more than just simply employment that needs to be somehow found within the regional cities. The basis of the regional cities' employment is fairly strong. Yes, it helps enormously if we've got the communication systems that allow people who once upon a time wouldn't have even thought of living in a regional city can now live in a regional city because they might only have to commute once a week or twice a week and they can do the rest telecommuting. But as the CEO of the Bendigo and Adelaide Bank, Marnie Baker, said, what this has done is it's changed people's perception. They can now live where they love. They make a decision about where they want to live before they make a decision about where they're going to live on the basis of where they work. So I think there's a fundamental shift going on in the way in which the population now perceives of regional areas.
My guest today are Trevor Budge, who is a strategic projects planner at the office at the City of Greater Bendigo at the moment. And with him as well is Nicole Gurran, Professor of Urban and Regional Planning at the University of Sydney. She's also the director of the Festival of Urbanism, which is coming up this weekend. More on that in just a moment. Nicole, Trevor made that point that, you know, people are now making the choice to live where they love, but sometimes we fall out of love where we live. And Nicole, I'm wondering if there's any trends or any evidence to suggest that people think they love what they want to do and move to the regions and then decide, in fact, they've made the wrong decision.
Oh, you're bringing back a whole lot of research I did about a decade ago looking at the phenomenon of sea change migration. And there used to be a cliche that researchers would talk about the couple that moved to Coffs Harbour to open a coffee shop. And, you know, hey presto, A, they didn't know anything about making coffee, and B, there are a lot of average coffee shops in Coffs Harbour, and, you know, and the move didn't work out. This is something that does happen when people move because they want a better lifestyle. Sometimes they do find it difficult to settle in the new location. But more often it's that the services that they may need, for instance, quality access to quality education facilities, particularly with an aging population, access
and health,
to quality
and health.
Health. Exactly.
Yes.
That's exactly right. Those are the things combined with the need to really have, you know, access to recreation facilities, you know, the type of cultural life that now regional communities are really starting to offer very well. But it's those things that affect whether a move is successful or not.
Trevor, as we come to a close here, so many investors, property investors, are probably eyeing off regional centres like Bendigo as a fantastic place to buy into because land and housing is still relatively cheap compared to the city. How do you ensure that the housing estates that are popping up all around Bendigo aren't full of investment properties?
Yeah, it's a really good point you make. Certainly the discussions with the real estate industry would indicate that investment is a motivation. I did make the point, which is very pertinent though, that rental properties are extremely scarce to find. So in actual fact, we actually need people to invest and create some rental properties, but that is a driver of the market. But I would point out that you know, people, and there's some items in today's paper which indicates that the moment that lockdown was announced for being off the agenda in terms of regional areas, I think it was a real estate agent in Ballarat said he had 36 listings came in that afternoon.
Wow.
So people are just simply responding to the market. Now, one of the things that we've observed with investors is that a lot of people are actually buying a property for investment in a regional city or a peri-urban town and with the intention that they might shift there. So they buy, they can get some sort of feel of what the community's like, and then they'll relocate to that over time.
Well, Trevor, can I interrupt and tell you that I actually had a look at the research in Bendigo, and some of those estates are insisting that a proportion of the land sales and housing sales in those estates go to people who guarantee they'll move.
Yeah.
To the premises,
yeah.
Because I think your council is very concerned about social fabric in these upcoming communities.
Absolutely. We did have some estates that were developed some years ago where a large proportion of properties went to absentee landlords, and we had a number of issues that arose because of that. So the council is very much aware of that as an issue. And, you know, the other thing that's happening, the Victorian government's got what's called a big build program, spending $5 billion on social housing. Quite a lot of that's to go to regions. So it's not just the private sector that's doing this expansion. So it's a very mobile situation at the moment, and the whole circumstances are pretty dynamic. It's very hard to read exactly what the consequences of all this change will be.
Well, just on that, Nicole, I might finish with you, if that's okay. What's your message to planners within state and federal and local government as to how to handle the situation? What are some of the things they need to be putting in place now to make sure that the weight of population growth doesn't drown them?
Thanks, Michael. Look, obviously in the immediate future, housing is the key thing that we've got to get right. The rental vacancies in regional Australia, in regional areas like Bendigo, have just fallen off a cliff. So it's critical to provide assistance to social housing and community-based organisations that can provide housing assistance to locals who've actually been displaced by, you know, by people moving in. But longer term, there's a need to really invest in cultural facilities, in education and health facilities, as well as really high quality transport networks that both provide for connectivity within the areas. And that can include low tech things as well, like cycling and walking and things, but also public transport in regional areas and really strong connections between regional areas, other regional areas, and the major cities. Those are the major ticket items.
Look, I thank you both very much. I think it's been a vital conversation to have, and more needs to happen, and it's been great. Thank you both very much indeed.
Thanks, Michael. And everyone, that Festival of Urbanism, we're going to be talking about all of these things. We're kicking off with a session with Trevor. It's an online program. It's all free. And I believe there'll be a link from the ABC website, but certainly via the University of Sydney website and Monash as well. Thanks very much, Michael.
You've done my job magnificently. Thank you, Nicole, and your own. It's been great. Trevor Budge, Nicole Garin, thanks again.
Thank you.
Trevor Budge, Strategic Projects Officer at the City of Greater Bendigo, one of the speakers at the Festival of Endangered Urbanism, which is all online and free, as Nicole said, starting this weekend, and there'll be a link on the Life Matters page as well. Now, Erica Voles, I asked people to tell us if they're old locals or new locals, how things are going in the regions. What have you seen?
Well, they've all answered the call, Michael. Vivian says...
Every one of them.
Every one of them. So excuse me if I don't get to your message. Vivian says, I live on Magnetic Island in North Queensland, and we've seen an influx of new people on the island. Unfortunately, many have brought the southern suburbs with them. Trees taken down, big fences going up, houses too big for the blocks, dogs roaming off leash, large cars. They're failing to understand the natural environment. One listener has texted about important logistics. Some regional towns on the new inland rail are predicted to double in size over the next 20 years. Right. Where will the drinking water come from in town in times of drought? And where will the increase in human waste go, or how will it be handled? Another listener agrees, I'm a water planner on the mid-north coast of New South Wales. Serious consideration needs to be given to climate-independent water supplies, such as purified, recycled water for drinking. We need to see a change in how we value and use water. We can't build ourselves out of trouble. And this is an important text given the pandemic, Michael. What all must know is that regional healthcare services are already underfunded and understaffed. This is a major consideration for regional growth planning. And Michael, I'll have more comments for you later.
Thank you, Erica. Erica back after the Too Hard Basket. And in a moment, the absolute joy and the absolute value of playgrounds.